Okay, so knife crime. We all see the headlines, right? It feels like it's constantly in the news, especially, London, but really across the country. It's stark, often pretty terrifying. And look, it's easy to jump to conclusions, but what if the way most of us understand it is, well, just scratching the surface? What if there's a whole complex story underneath that we're missing? Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's really not as simple as just, bad kids making bad choices. It goes much deeper than that.
Eberhow.
Well, knife crime, fundamentally, it's a symptom. It's often the really devastating end result of years, sometimes generations, of neglect, systemic neglect.
Systemic neglect.
Yeah. And our mission, really, with this deep dive, and we're drawing from some powerful insights, particularly an interview called Unmasking Knife Crime, Beyond the Headlines, is to try and peel back those layers. We want to explore the underlying causes, the real reasons, and how young people actually get drawn into this to give you a perspective that maybe challenges those easy assumptions, give you a quicker but still thorough understanding.
Right. So if it's not just bad kids, like you say, then what is driving it? What are the key things we're maybe missing in the general conversation?
It's rooted much, much deeper in what you can only really call systemic failures. I mean, you've got young people growing up in poverty, serious poverty sometimes, cramped homes, maybe families that are fractured or under immense stress. Then add to that a real lack of community resources. Youth clubs closed down, nowhere safe or constructive to go.
So nothing to do.
Pretty much. Nothing to do but maybe hang around or sit scrolling online. And schools, often chronically underfunded, mental health services for these kids, often just not there or impossible to access.
And while all that's missing.
Exactly. While there's this vacuum, they look around, especially online, social media, and what do they see? People flashing cash, expensive watches, fast cars, making it look like that's normal, easy life.
That contrast must be huge. This void you're describing, the lack of support and opportunity,
Yeah.
it feels like something else is bound to
Yeah.
step in, right?
It creates the perfect storm, the perfect vacuum. And that's where gangs often move in. They fill that gap. They offer the things society isn't
And
providing.
what are they offering?
A sense of belonging, for one, perceived respect, protection, or at least the idea of it, and yes, money, or the promise of it. For a lot of these young people, you have to understand, this isn't really about choosing violence. It feels more like survival.
Survival over choice. That's a really strong way to put it. But, some people listening might still think, well, hold on, there's always some choice, isn't there? There has to be personal responsibility somewhere, even with all those pressures. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I get that question. And I'd just challenge anyone listening, honestly. Try and swap shoes with one of these kids for just 1 week. See how much real choice you feel you have then.
Put yourself in their place.
Exactly. When you've got maybe no heating at home, not enough food, no adults you feel safe with or can rely on, and the world outside, subtly or not so subtly, is telling you you're basically worthless. You become desperate. You'll grab on to almost anything that gives you even a tiny feeling of power or worth or belonging. It's easy for us from the outside to point fingers, but we're often very slow to ask why. Why did the system let them down so badly in the first place? What are the pressures that just eclipse our usual ideas of free choice?
Okay, so it's way more complex than just bad choices. Can you maybe walk us through how a kid actually gets drawn in? What's that journey look like? It sounds like it's bigger than just joining a gang, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's much bigger than just gangs. Let's sort of trace that path, that pipeline, if you like. It often starts at home. Maybe chronic stress, deep poverty, like we said, sometimes family violence, or just total neglect. Then school. School can become another point of failure.
How so?
Teachers, often overworked and maybe not equipped, might label a kid as trouble really early on, before they even hit year six sometimes.
Wow.
And that label sticks. It can lead to them being pushed out, excluded, isolated, forgotten, really, by the system that's supposed to help them.
And that seeds back into the poverty thing.
Correctly. Empty cupboards at home, stressed parents, no pocket money, can't afford the right trainers or clothes. Just this constant feeling of shame of being less than. So then they're out, maybe on the street more, and they see the older lads rolling in nice cars, wearing designer gear. What does that look like to them?
Power, respect, money, everything they don't have.
Exactly. And the way in can seem so small at first. A little request, just run this for me, hold this for a minute.
Seems harmless enough.
Initially, yeah. But by the time they realize how deep they're in, it's often too late. They're carrying things, moving things, they're trapped.
So Really, by the time we hear that label in the news, gang member, the damage has been done. The system failed them years before that.
Precisely. They've been failed long, long before anyone called them that. And think about carrying a knife.
Yeah.
Seriously, nobody wants to carry an F at 12 or 14.
No.
They do it because they're scared, deeply scared, because they feel hunted, sometimes by other kids caught in the same cycle, sometimes just by life itself, by their circumstances. It's a defense mechanism.
That makes sense, but most of this focus, understandably, is on kids from really tough, low-income backgrounds. What about the stories we sometimes hear about kids from more well-off families getting involved? Why does that happen?
That's a really important question. Because it does happen. You see kids from big houses, private schools sometimes, but they're dealing with a different kind of neglect.
Different how?
Maybe parents who are never home,
yeah,
too busy climbing the corporate ladder, perhaps. They might throw money at the kids, gadgets, holidays, whatever, but not time, not real connection, not love, essentially.
So an emotional neglect.
Exactly. These kids aren't hungry for food. They're starving for attention, for respect, maybe for adrenaline, for excitement, something to fill that void inside.
And the gangs.
Oh.
They don't care about the background.
Gangs don't care what your postcode is or what's in your parents' bank account. If they see a gap, an unmet need, whether it's for cash or belonging or just excitement, they'll exploit it. It's not always about poverty. Sometimes it's about that hunger for something more.
Okay, so these young people, regardless of background, are being drawn in, often exploited. Which brings up a crucial point. Who's actually running these operations? Who's really at the top? It can't be the teenagers we see arrested, right?
No, let's be absolutely clear on that. It is not the kids whose faces end up in the news reports.
So who is it?
At the top of this pyramid, you've got grown men, older guys, sometimes people operating completely outside the community itself. They're sitting pretty largely untouched.
And the kids are just...
They use these kids like pawns, disposable assets, running deliveries, holding the weapons, doing the risky stuff on the street, taking the fall if the police get involved. It's a classic exploitation structure.
Right.
Like a pyramid. You've got the youngest, most vulnerable kids right at the bottom, maybe slightly older teenagers in the middle, enforcing things. And then the masterminds, the very top, rarely seen, almost never caught.
So the ones carrying the knives, the ones getting hurt and arrested.
They're just the ones being exploited.
Yeah.
The most visible cogs in a much larger, much darker machine run by others.
And part of that machine, that environment, involves this idea of postcode wars we hear about. Kids afraid to cross certain streets. What's the real impact of that, the day-to-day reality?
Postcode wars. Yeah, they're a grim reality. Basically, it's territorial beasts between different areas. Sometimes it's based on really old rivalries. Sometimes it's petty stuff that escalates. Sometimes it's just inherited violence passed down.
And the impact on the kids living there?
It's immense, psychologically damaging. You have young people who literally cannot go two streets over from their home without genuine fear. Fear of getting jumped, robbed, stabbed.
Just for being in the wrong area.
Just for crossing an invisible line. Imagine being a teenager feeling physically trapped, confined to your own small neighborhood, your ends, constantly looking over your shoulder. It's trauma built on top of all the other trauma they might be facing.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
And terrifying.
It is. And what's frustrating is that the response is often just more policing of those boundaries. Is if that alone is going to fix the deep-seated fear and violence and lack of opportunity that fuels it in the first place.
So wrapping this up then, this deep dive, it really shifts the perspective, doesn't it? It seems the core message is that knife crime isn't really about bad kids making isolated choices. It's a symptom, a result of deep societal neglect, systemic failures, and this pyramid of exploitation you described.
Absolutely. And if there's one thing I hope people listening take away, especially if you find yourself judging these young people, remember this analogy from the source material. You wouldn't blame a child working in a sweatshop for making trainers, right?
No, of course not. You blame the system, the exploiters.
Exactly. So don't just blame a child on the street for carrying the weight of a system they didn't create, for carrying someone else's burden, essentially.
They didn't build this system. They're just trying to survive it.
That's it, precisely. They're surviving it. And if we don't start really listening to them, properly understanding their reality, giving them actual, tangible hope, building real opportunities for a different path.
Then what?
Then they'll keep getting hurt, keep dying.
Yeah.
And we'll just keep having these same heartbreaking conversations over and over again. It really leaves you with a question, doesn't it? What part do we all play in changing that future?